You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405 on this beautiful sunny day here in Orange County. We have with us today an entrepreneurial thrill seeker. We have somebody I've known for a long time who has helped many businesses move forward. And in fact, he's involved right now with another interesting consumer bank startup. And this is Kerry Ransom. So, Kerry, welcome to the Pilgrim on the 405.
Thanks, Will. Great to be here.
So, Kerry, tell us, entrepreneurial thrill seeker, tell us what that means to you.
Sure. So I, just for quick background, grew up in a family business. And so I think, the entrepreneur, or the entrepreneurial spirit, at least, was in me from early age. It's probably born into me to some extent. And I've said for a long time that I feel like most of what I learned watching my father, my grandfather in our family business that is almost 150 years old. And so as I started to develop my own path of what I wanted to do, I started to determine that I was an entrepreneur, but I could be an entrepreneur in a bunch of different flavors. And there are the entrepreneurs that it needs to be their idea, it needs to be their company. I think and act and can certainly empathize with that founder or owner of a business, but can also partner with them and really try to help them scale or unlock additional potential by maybe providing a new lens or new frame to the business. So I've ended up over the last couple decades becoming that thrill seeker that's jumped into a number of different businesses at different stages, many tech businesses, early stage startups. I've started a couple of my own companies as well. I've also done turnarounds, and I think I can just provide that entrepreneurial lens to say, where is the opportunity? How do we marshal the resources to go pursue that and try to execute on a plan to maximize the potential of a business and pull together the right people or resources necessary to do that.
So where is your sweet spot? Is it startups? Is it that place where people are beginning to get traction and now they want to grow and want to increase their sales?
So I've found that I find myself in a couple places where I've done well. One, the current company I'm in was at that place where they had some traction. They were really ready to grow. Raised a substantial venture round, almost $50 million last fall, and needed to really start to put a plan in place of how are we going to invest for that next round to really accelerate the growth of the company and increase the value of the enterprise through that investment back into the business. And so that's been an area that I've been involved with a number of times where I've come in as kind of that second or right hand to the founder who maybe hasn't done it. This is probably close to my 10th startup that I've been involved with. And so I can draw on a lot of those experiences to really try to bring options or potential plays that could be used in this particular business at this point in time.
Do you help make the business move forward? Are you actually involved in helping the leaders in the business move forward?
I am. I find, and certainly over the last close to probably 10 years, I've found that my role has evolved pretty significantly from one of doing a lot of work, and I've had almost every role that you could possibly have in a company, except most companies I've been involved with have a strong technology element to them, and I'm not an engineer by background, but mm-hmm. having spent most of the last 25 years with engineers, I have a great adoration of them and like to be around that, but I've had pretty much every other job. Mm-hmm. So earlier in my career, and still to this day at times when necessary, I can produce work, but I've found that in the last several opportunities, I've become much more of a coach and a leader and a mentor and advisor and spend a lot of my time and I get a lot of my satisfaction by growing the people mm-hmm. in the organization. And sometimes that's growing them into the potential that they really have mm-hmm. And helping them push through boundaries, because as a company goes from a handful of people to dozens of people to hundreds of people, the roles that are required tend to change. And some people can make it through and continue to be the leader of an area. Others sort of find or need to be helped to find where their real sweet spot is, where they can have the most success and the most fulfillment in what they do. And so I find that I spend a lot of my time doing that, and then also helping the organization identify where are the key needs, where do we need to go find either new people or at times, you know, better people to go execute in particular areas of the business.
Primarily, there's in the leadership team, there's two key roles. One is the visionary, mm-hmm. and very often that's the founder, yes. the one who created that's the product. Right. And after he or she has sold to friends or potential investors, mm-hmm. After they have moved out of the garage, then they begin to assume larger responsibilities, and if they keep doing it, they're going to put a limit on the growth of the company. Now, I have found that if you have a true visionary, they're not going to change. And so what I have found is important in this transition from startup to growth company is what I call the integrator. And the integrator's job is not, it's no longer to tell the other people what to do, whether it's sales and marketing or operations mm-hmm. or finance, where before the visionary was saying, just come in, I'll tell you how to do it. I'll mm-hmm. tell you how to do everything here. Mm-hmm. Now it's the job of the integrator to help sales and marketing lead, ops lead, and finance lead to work harmoniously that's toward right. accomplishing the vision.
That's right.
And that means that now what you talked about having the right person, that means getting a person who gets it, who wants to be in there and has the capability, the capacity for being in there. And when you begin to do that in each of these areas, then they take responsibility for it.
That's right.
And if they can't, they're not capable, or they no longer want to, then let's find somebody who does.
That's right.
That kind of transition, it seems to me that you, sounds to me like you operate in that integrator role.
Absolutely. And at times, I think where I also, because of just the entrepreneur that's also inside of me, I often can also serve as a translator when that vision is not always easily translated into action. Well, and so sometimes, you know, that you have these incredibly visionary entrepreneurs, and I've had the fortune of working with some of them, but that vision has to get translated into some sort of strategy mm-hmm. that then people in these various functions, as you described, can put a plan together to actually execute against. Because a vision on its face is really more about an imagined future state
correct.
Or the way the world should be or something mm-hmm. that can be very inspirational, mm-hmm. but that doesn't always translate into what's the priorities, what are the objectives over the next period, 12 mm-hmm. months, quarter, what have you, and then how do I do my work today uh-huh. that adds to that and helps move that vision forward to reality.
And that's what we do in the entrepreneurial operating system. EOS is that visionary, you know, you got a visionary trapped in the integrator role when every 90 days we have a new different place that we're sure. going, we have a different product that we're going to have, a new thing we're going to, before the rest of the company even catches up to that. Mm-hmm. And so what we have given visionaries and integrators, the tool we give them is called the same page meeting. And that means you're going to be meeting once a week, twice a month, something like that. But you're going to regularly meet to make sure that the visionary and integrator are on the same page.
Totally makes sense.
That you take those 15 to 20 ideas that visionary is going to create every month, and together we pick out the two or three that we're going to take to the rest of the company.
Yeah, totally makes sense.
Yeah, and then that means that then each of the areas, whatever that, you know, 3 to 7 members of the leadership team plus the integrator, that they can then help define what contribution each of the areas will be making to get to that vision or to take these three great ideas and bring them to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you see that transition working in companies? You know, we've got 100,000 companies in Orange mm-hmm. County.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you see that transition? Where do they learn how to do that?
So I think I've seen it happen and manifest itself a couple different ways. I mean, one way that it's learned is by trial and error,
mm-hmm.
right? You have the situation where somebody's tried something either the same way multiple times, or they've tried a few things and some have worked and some haven't, and they eventually get to a place where they understand that they need to either bring in some help or be a little bit more open-minded to how they may want to adopt something like your entrepreneurial operating system or a different framework for how they do it. The other is, I think, maturity. And maturity could be gained through experience. It could be gained through just being willing to take coaching and advice and seek it out. You know, one of the stories I tell a lot early in my career in the startup world, I was the first business person into a company. There were three engineers. When I met the entrepreneur, he had a software product and one customer and was looking for a VP of sales. And I was at a place where I had some sales background. I convinced him that he really just needed more customers. Mm-hmm. And a VP of sales at that point probably was not the next hire, because a good VP of sales probably hadn't called a customer or made a cold call in 10 years. Right?
I have a bag around here someplace.
Exactly. And so I convinced him that he just needed more customers, and I could help him get more customers and also help him start to develop a business team. And one of the stories that I tell a lot is, these were in the early days, and you're certainly familiar with the online advertising platform that Google makes available for pay-per-click ads. And I was an early, early user, so this dates me a little bit.
Right.
But I tell the story often to some of the millennials that I work with today of, I would go on there and I'd write some ads, and I'd always pick the winning ad. I'd write several but would do testing, but I always knew this is my best one. Mm-hmm. And I was wrong 100% of the time. Right. And I think the great lesson from that was that might think that my instinct or my intuition is really well honed, but I need to be super open-minded, seek input from as many places as I can, try to synthesize that into a decision, and assuming it's not an irreversible decision. And what I find in most business today is that most decisions are not irreversible. The speed of decision making is really where the advantage is. Make a quick decision, make sure you have a way to measure that it's either working or not, and then iterate very quickly.
Right.
And
right.
I think that really does start to develop a system that is also really respected by the other people on the team.
So I hear you saying that there are three ways that you have seen this transition from a startup with a very small, tight group to a place where you've got leadership taking responsibility for various areas. One was that they bring in an integrator like you, which is a good thing to do.
Hard. I mean, often that gets either it could get forced by outside investors.
Yes.
It could be a realization after a major stumble.
Right.
But it's hard. I mean, that founder control, and you've seen it, it's a hard reality for a lot of people.
Absolutely hard. And the choice is, we're either going to flatline or we're going to go out of business.
That's right.
And so one is to find a person gifted like you who's had the experience and can come in and help build that team, coach them, unleash their potential. Another is using a system like the entrepreneurial operating system, coming in and using that to roll out to the whole company.
That's right.
And the third you said was that the visionary matures. Now, have you seen visionaries, true visionaries, make that switch successfully?
I have. I think it just needs to be a really honest self-reflection and dialogue where, and as I talk about it, even with others on the team, I mean, there's this notion of founder, and to me, founder isn't who was here on day one. It's a mindset.
Right.
And some founders have a really nice ability to evolve. And as I talk to a lot of folks in these fast-growing companies, because most of the companies that I'm in are, by their nature, because of the technology aspect or the fact that they're backed by institutional investors, there's a strong desire to grow quickly. And what I often am coaching people is to say, you're not going to be able to do the next job until you can get yourself out of your current job.
Yes.
And that means you need to make sure that it's well understood, well documented, you know how to identify the right person to replace you. Maybe you're even grooming that person. Mm-hmm. And so that can, for the right kinds of people, really build that transition. And the same thing goes for that visionary entrepreneur. If they're used to doing everything and they want to grow, those things run in complete conflict with each other, because them doing everything does not scale. And it really becomes a question of what's more important to them. Is it their business being as successful as it can possibly be, or them maintaining control? And if they can have an honest dialogue and start to really understand it, often it could be by talking to people who've already been through it, who've been and gone farther than them. But there are some that absolutely can make that transition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we see people like Mark Zuckerberg or Jeff Bezos, like at a massive scale, who have done it, who tend to be the exception, mm-hmm. as you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, in many cases, the founding entrepreneur is not the one that takes it through to some sort of liquidity event mm-hmm. or an IPO, because they don't have that kind of either advisory board around them or mentor or their own self-reflection to say...
Leadership team.
Or a team that they can rely
upon. Leadership team that takes responsibility for the various areas that are going to, when successful, will take that company to success vision. And to me, one of the things that really important is taking that vision and sharing it with the whole team, mm-hmm. so that everybody, 100% people from the fellow who's emptying the trash can all the way up to the CEO, they know where this company's going and how it's going to get there. And so sharing that vision, getting really clear, what are our core values? Where are we going? What's the point of this? What we're trying to do? And what do we expect to have happen? What's our goal? What's our, we call it 10-year target, but it could be 5 years, it could be 30 years. But what are we doing here?
That's right. And that's a key, that vision casting is an incredibly important role. And in the early days, it's not as important when you've got a small number mm-hmm. of nodes on the network. When it's a handful of people, you just don't have that many mm-hmm. connected lines that you have to manage. And so you don't have to do it as often. But as a team is growing, you're exponentially increasing the number of nodes and mm-hmm. connection points. And so one of the things I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs about is this notion of about the time that you're sick of talking about your vision or any key issue is about the time that people are just starting to listen.
We say, they have to hear it at least 7 times.
Sure.
And so we coach people to recognize that when they're frustrated at, I've told you this at least 4 times, well, rather be frustrated, be happy. You only have 3 times
That's
more
right.
to go.
That's right. That's a great point. That's right.
So getting that vision out there shared by all, then getting the right people in the right seats, the people who get it, they want to be there. They bounce out of bed in the morning wanting to be there, and they're capable of mm-hmm. it. Then we can depend upon them to take responsibility. We can train them to be accountable. We can train them to help solve issues. And then we get clear data coming at us, right? And you mentioned that, so that we're really making our decisions based upon data rather than suppositions, hopes, dreams, fears.
Right.
And so getting a really clear vision, shared by all, right people, right seat, and then everybody having a measurable that, so I'm contributing to this. I'm not just showing up and picking up my paycheck. I'm actually contributing on a regular basis. These are the measurables that I have, and that's reflected in the weekly scorecard. KPIs,
sure.
whatever it is.
Right.
Those 3 things to me are the key. And when we do that, what's going to be, to me, the company is going to be transparent, and out of that will come the real issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to take a little break right here and hear from our sponsors, but we'll come back and then I want to talk a little bit more about issues and process and how we make this whole thing work.
Sounds good.
All right. We'll be right back with Kerry Ransom talking about how to make businesses thrive in California.
Listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.
Hi, it's time for another tip from Sandler Training. Traditional sales training teaches techniques on how to eliminate stalls and objections, Some are fancy sales moves, while others are programmed responses. Sales is a conversation, and I don't know how you can memorize every possible response for every sales situation. Also, the prospect has usually heard these responses before and has been turned off by some fancy sales move. When you really think about it, the only person qualified to address the stall or objection is the prospect. Ask the right questions, and you will eliminate stalls and objections. And that's another tip from Sandler Training, finding power through reinforcement.
Well, welcome back to the Pilgrim on the 405, where we're talking with Carrie Ransom and talking about that really important shift from when the founder has begun to see success in his or her organization and now begins to deal with that critical issue of how do we scale this? How do we make this larger without killing me? How do I begin to grow without sacrificing my family and the things that I really love doing in addition to business? So Carrie, we were talking about having the vision shared by all, where we're going, how we're going to get there, what's our big target. We talked about getting the right people in the right seat, and then we talked about data, getting the right data that we can depend upon, people having measurables. What I was mentioning, it seems to me that after we have those three things in place on a regular basis, then the issues, the real issues in the company will start coming to the fore. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about suggestion box issues. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the real issues that the company has to solve. I mean, after all, the marketplace changes regularly.
That's right.
The size of the company is going to change. That's going to change the dynamics. It's going to change what level they have to deal with. And so how do you see companies with issues, how they deal with issues?
Great question. I think it varies widely. I mean, you know, one of the challenges that I've seen in certain instances, and I think if people come into a situation with a really strongly held point of view, even if they don't have data to support it, they can usually go find some data to support it. You know, one of my colleagues says he has strong opinions weakly held, and I think that's a good way. You know, when I do a lot of advising, formally and informally, to entrepreneurs and people seek me out often for an opinion, and I'm always happy to share that I will have an opinion for you, and it will be completely candid and unfiltered as my opinion. But what I always qualify that with is I'm not sure how valuable or accurate it is, but it's my opinion and I'll own it. And I think where to your point on data can really, when it's objective and clean and people can agree to sort of how it came to be, it can be a great arbiter of those opinions and points of view. Where in an ideal world, people are really seeking the best answer and not to them being right.
Mm-hmm.
And that having that diverse set of opinions and points of view can actually be really, really valuable to getting to the best answers.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the companies that have the best answers ultimately are going to win.
Well,
and they're going to evolve, right? Like, they're going to see the marketplace changing and they're going to adapt.
Right.
They're not going to dig in their heels and just pretend like things haven't changed.
Well, and to me, the real value of the company is in how we address those issues.
That's right.
How we solve those issues. And what I've been very interested in and pleased with the response from companies who are learning how to make decisions. We talk about meetings where people come in and address the issue by trying to, they start off with, well, here is the solution to the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's before they even understand or agree upon what the real problem is.
Right.
And they might be solving the wrong problem, they might be solving a symptom rather than the root issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we teach them to do is you got to dig, and in the meeting, everybody in the meeting has to finally agree on what is the real problem here. And once we've done that, then this is a significant difference in doing this. And you talked about strong opinions loosely held. People get to talk about what they think the solution is, but they only get to talk about it one time. Get it out there, let people ask all the questions they want, and that's it. Then let the next person come up. They may pick up on that, and that's their turn. But everybody gets to put in what they think the solution is, but only talk about their solution one time. And we can continue to go around the circle until the conversation gets redundant. And what we've done is we've begun to see what the solutions might be.
Yes.
And there might be two or three possibilities. And then, so this is IDS, identify the real problem, discuss it, and then S, solve it. Pick one. And pick one means we might not be able to pick the best one right now, but before this meeting's over, we're going to have a solution we're going to try.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's often better for people to pick one right now than put it off for 6 months.
Absolutely.
To get the perfect one. Because by the time 6 months comes, things will have changed.
That's right. Things are just changing too rapidly. The other thing I would add to that, and I think that's a great system for doing that, is how important it is to understand the company's culture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, overall culture, but even the culture of that team.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen teams that have a really high degree of trust and safety, and they can come into a room like that and they can have a really objective, honest discussion and get to a really good set of solutions or alignment around, you know, where do we go from here. I've seen others where there's a lot of political agendas or individual views that are not aligned, and how the discussion can even go could look more like theatrics than an actual. And so, you know, I just want to underscore how important it is to invest in building some of those foundational elements of the team, such as trust and safety,
mm-hmm.
so that you can focus less on me versus you or my need to be right or yours, and more on what's best for the overall outcome.
Does that go back to values?
I think it does. Right. And some of it's just intention as well, in that I think assuming that people working together are going to naturally build trust and safety and alignment over time is a false assumption. I think you have to have intention about it. Mm-hmm. And you know, somebody has to go first. I feel like as the leader, mm-hmm. I can, you know, one of my core values is leading by example. And I learned mm-hmm. that early in life. As I said, learned most of what I did from my father and grandfather. And mm-hmm. that was always their view, is they were never going, even me as the son and grandson of the owners, they were never going to ask me to do something they weren't willing to do themselves. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
if that started with, you know, sweeping up sawdust, my dad showed me how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was instilled in me at an early age and still carries with me today. And so if I'm going to ask people to be vulnerable so that we can try to build trust with each other, I feel compelled that I need to be the one to go first and show them that I'm very sincere and open and honest about my intentions, my goals, and that I'm there not self-serving for me, but for the best outcome of the enterprise. And I'll play whatever roles needed to do that.
If that is the value of the company, so in hiring, to what degree do the values of the company come into play about qualifying people for hiring?
Mm-hmm. It should be critical,
mm-hmm.
right? When you're setting up a hiring system, I think in the early days of a startup, you'd probably intuit mm-hmm. more of that than you really set up a system. But as you start to grow, you have to build recruiting and hiring systems that definitely incorporate the core company values. And we do things and have in several of my companies implemented particular questions that are assigned to people that are part of the recruiting or hiring mm-hmm. team to explore particular values
mm-hmm.
and make sure it's not just a do I like you or would I like to work with you or not, but
right.
does this person truly have and do they have a history of demonstrating those key values? And ideally those values match with the company, but also match with the success in the role that person is potentially going to take.
Well, would it make sense at the same time to be looking at the current employees and find out, how they match up, how they align with the corporate values, and when they don't, to give them the opportunity to do whatever's necessary to change, to come into alignment with that. At the same time, if they don't, they probably shouldn't be there.
That's right. And, you know, I think there's two points that I would make to that. I mean, number one is if they've been there for quite a while, they probably share the values. That's in those formative early days of a company, the values are really all you have in the mm-hmm. beginning. And so that's really what brings people together. And they generally aren't going to change. I mean, unless they're really off. But most companies start with a pretty clear set of values of what the founder is all about, what they stand for. And so the likelihood that somebody's been there for a long time is going to be misaligned is probably lower. Mm-hmm. The new employee, you absolutely could have a mishire, and that mm-hmm. happens. My general view on hiring today is what I call hire fast, fire fast, which is a little contrarian to mm-hmm. how some people think about it. But again, in a the environment that we're in right now, and I've had that opinion for a long time, but the environment we're in right now of high employment, if you have needs, you need people in there mm-hmm. Doing it, and you want to develop a recruiting and hiring system that has a high degree of predictability. But even with that, it's never going to be 100%. Right, and so right. you just need to be ready to immediately start measuring, is this person a good fit? Do they have the right values? Are they able to produce within the system and the objectives that we've laid out? And if they are, great. If not, then mm-hmm. reload mm-hmm. and try and find somebody else.
Well, I would take a little issue with you. In the companies that I have worked with, the 10 companies right now that I'm working with, there are people who have been there for several years who do not fit the values.
Interesting.
And as we roll this system out, that becomes very clear. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that means that they make the decision to move on. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a little more nudging that needs to happen.
And why do you think that is, Will? Do you think it's just they haven't been clearly communicated in the past as to what the values are, or is the business changed to a place where
often they didn't have values? They didn't have an articulated sense of values. They're not doing what now that they're they'll spend every quarter. They'll stand up and give the values speech. These are examples of where the values were used in the last quarter. These are some examples of how, when they weren't used, we got into trouble. And we have a tool, a very simple tool, called the People Analyzer. We put the values at the top, the people on the left-hand side. Plus means they're doing it most of the time. Minus means they rarely do it. Plus, minus, sometimes, sometimes not. But when you get you get your leadership team begins to look at their teams and analyze that, they may have a tool and die guy who's just the best in the world, but he does not agree with the values, and that's a problem.
Sure.
Right?
Oh
my
gosh. Huge problem.
He's the best guy, but he's always chipping away at the company. On the other hand, you might have somebody who really has great values. I mean, they're maybe even part of the family, but they really can't do the job. Mm-hmm. So these kind of dilemmas need to get onto the table. Now they become issues to IDS and figure out how we're going to solve them. So it's that values thing, I think, is a critical piece, and those values may change over time, but articulating them in hiring, in firing, in developing, in appraising, and reviewing, mm-hmm. using those values regularly, to me, is the way that it becomes incorporated in it becomes the DNA of the company.
Absolutely.
Now, then we talked a little bit about process, documentation of process. That's pretty critical. Mm-hmm. As you're trying to scale and as you're trying to ramp up, you have new people coming in. If you're expecting them to create the process, you got a problem. Versus, this is our company process. And so over the two-year journey that we take with companies in EOS, they are putting together all of their HR, their hiring, their operations, all their accounting, sales, marketing, getting those processes down into a one- or two-page document each so that they're actually documenting those and refining them and then training people to use them. To me, that's how that company becomes predictable.
That's right.
And do you work with that? I mean, do you go about doing
that? Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's funny. We're in the middle of a huge transformation project right now at Aspiration, and one of the byproduct benefits of it, this was a company that was running really, really fast and had for a long time, and a lot of the early employees were still there. And so a lot of the process knowledge was in people's heads and hadn't been written down. And we didn't have a formal onboarding, training, scale process. And this project forced us, which was a nice byproduct, to document all of our existing processes so that we could start to create the new processes that will occur as we're transforming.
Mm-hmm.
We're building a completely new foundation and have a set of new vendors and partners that will be a part of that. And that's forcing us to have to do some process change, mm-hmm. which is great. But we had to document the old so that we could do some gap analysis to figure out what the new ones needed to look like. And the great benefit to that is now as we bring in new folks, there's a huge body of evidence and work that shows them exactly how things are done so that they can onboard much more quickly and ideally even help us continue to improve and scale as we go. Because, you know, as you know, most of those things, especially in a tech type of business, as soon as they're written down, they almost become outdated.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need to evolve. But we've started to develop that muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's been a great benefit mm-hmm. for the company and will help us in the coming years.
Well, ultimately, in our process, we get to the place where every process is documented. And they're in a three-ring binder. This is the company way. Mm-hmm. This is what we do. And it's followed by all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's no Lone Rangers out there doing it their own way. If you have a better way, come in and
sure.
let's talk about it.
That's right.
But until then, this is the process. Mm-hmm. This is what we do. Well,
right.
finally, the one of the things I find very important is what we call the L10 meeting. This is a weekly meeting, 90 minutes long, starts on time, ends on time, same day, same time. Everybody comes. The only reason they miss is vacation or death,
mm-hmm.
their death,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's at this point that they go down the same agenda every week, which is basically the first part is just reporting. What's the scorecard? You know, our 90-day projects, are we on track with those so that we're not surprised at the end? Oops, I didn't get there.
Mm-hmm.
Getting clear about any headlines of customer or employee issues that we might want to have. But spending 5 minutes on each of those, right, moving right through. And then the weekly to-dos, getting 90% of those done. The things that we said we would do last week based mm-hmm. upon our issue session, did we get them done? And just simply going down and yes or no, and mm-hmm. aiming for getting 90% of those done, which to me builds up that accountability. It builds up the ability to predict. And so that's 20 minutes, and now we have 60 minutes to go into our issues. And getting that issues list out there of everything in the company, long-term, more than 90 days, short-term, we're going to get around to these in this 90 days. And then taking them one at a time, pick out the top three, and let's IDS them. Identify the real problem, discuss it in the particular way we've talked about, pick out a solution, and then somebody's or various people are going to take different parts of that to actually get it done in the next week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, that on a regular basis is how a company's going to move forward in that
sure.
leadership team, and then roll that out to the rest of the company so everybody ultimately is involved in one of
in
those.
One kind of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
totally makes sense. And I think that the other part you start to really see there is that momentum
mm-hmm.
that can build. As
mm-hmm.
I mean, people, I think we all naturally like to see, not everybody's a checklist type person, but people like to see accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
They like to see progress. They like to see improvement happening. And so as a way to really identify that and celebrate that is a great way to, you know, that some form like you described, I think is a great way
mm-hmm.
to both have that accountability and encouragement of each other as the company is going through a constant evolution.
Yeah, well, and then also you're freeing up people from any barriers that they have to a mental ownership and responsibility and participation, and contribution. And to me, that translates into, you might call it self-esteem, you might call it confidence, but it's that competence that people have that, when it's all top-down, never gets realized.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think companies lose 50, 60, 70% of the productivity by not having a way for people to participate and actually be accountable for what they said they wanted to do.
That's right.
What should companies, what are companies feeling right now? They need to call you. I don't know if you how much time you have, but they call you or call me or one of my other EOS buddies around. What kind of things would they be feeling right now that should give them the sort of red flag that I need to call somebody?
Sure. I think it's, in some cases, it's a feeling that you kind of look around the organization and you don't necessarily know that you have anybody you can turn to mm-hmm. to offload some of the work that you feel like you are taking on. Or yeah, I think you mentioned earlier, you know, people who feeling like I'm just working way too hard in my business and maybe not working on my business, mm-hmm. And which is different, and that it's hard to really have that ability to think strategically and have a longer term view when you're in that day to day, and you need to build a system and mm-hmm. a team. Mm-hmm. It's a team sport, especially as you scale. Mm-hmm. And so I think that feeling of somewhat stuck is definitely one feeling. Another is, to the extent you're really listening to your team, if you feel like the team is dissatisfied, mm-hmm. they don't feel like they have a voice, that they're participating, that they're valued, that there's something's not going right. Mm-hmm. And that could be communication, or as we talked about earlier, you know, not sharing enough of the vision and the why, people not feeling like they understand their purpose and meaning of their role in the organization. That's a place where is also going to hold back productivity or hold people back. Mm-hmm. You're seeing a lot of turnover. You're seeing a lot of dissatisfaction, I think, amongst the team, especially even if the business, and I see this sometimes even in a growing business where the business is good, where that temperature is just not mm-hmm. Not as good or as high as it should be. Mm-hmm. I mean, if a company is really doing well, in theory, people should be pretty happy and excited about it. And right. if they're not, if there's a misalignment there, then mm-hmm. that's to me symptomatic of something else that isn't quite working.
I would add lack of trust. Mm-hmm. Lack of trust in the leadership team. And to me, those are the kind of flags that should cause people to wonder, what can I do differently? And how would any investment of time, resources, or even money, what kind of return can that bring? And in my experience, it's a 10x every time.
That's right. I mean, you only have a finite number of hours in a day, but if you can activate 5 people, 10 people, 100 people to be that much more productive, that's great leverage that is going to absolutely lead to the right kinds of improvements in the core KPIs of your business. So whether that's a revenue growth or customer retention or margin improvement or cost mm-hmm. savings, whatever it may be that are the key
metrics. It could be all of those.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right. But whatever the key identified ones that you feel like you need to focus on, it's going to be hard for most people to do it themselves mm-hmm. unless they're a solopreneur. Mm-hmm. But as you start to build a business that has, you know, handful to tens to dozens or hundreds of people, you've got to find a way to get good leverage, and you're going to get that through a better aligned group of people and the systems and processes that are, as you said, predictable or more predictable than just leaving people to their own devices.
Well, so are you looking for companies that might find a place for you?
I do a number of, at any point in time, I'm always, have my hands in a number of things. Mm-hmm. I like to have a full-time activity. Right now, I'm helping to lead this startup bank and having a ton of fun with that. But I always am happy to have conversations with folks. And if I don't have the time, having been here now 15 years, I know a lot of folks, great folks like you,
right.
And I'm always happy to make connections.
So how would people contact you if they wanted to have this conversation?
The easiest, fastest way to find me, I'm pretty active on social media. You can easily find me on LinkedIn. And so that's probably the best place to start. And
Carrie Ransom.
Carrie Ransom is literally my LinkedIn, all one word.
C-A-R-E.
C-A-R-E-Y-R-A-N-S-O-M.
Good.
On LinkedIn. And that's usually a great place to start. And then we can take it off from there and figure out what the next step is.
Good. Well, and for me, my vision is that by January of next year, I will have 24 clients that we're doing this with. And it's a 2-year journey. Mm-hmm. The 10 have right now, they're making lots of progress.
That's great.
And And so as we add those on, and people get in touch with me by simply calling my number, it's 949-355-6013, and we have a conversation. We talk about the kind of things that you and I have been talking about to find out what it is that's getting in the way and what, you know, whether it's bring a person in as that integrator, whether it's develop a system that's going to help them become the things that they want to become and then to deal with the changes that are inevitable, or whether it's, you know, helping that CEO to find a coach so you begin to let go of some of those things.
That's great.
Well, I think, you know, as we look at helping businesses in Orange County thrive, those are the kind of things that I see that are really valuable and helpful. So thanks a lot, Kerry, for being here.
Thank you. Great to be here, and really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, I think there's a number of resources out there right now who can really help businesses in Orange County thrive.
We'd love to see nothing more, and I think our friends in these businesses are going to have much more fulfilled days in these kinds of companies that are really aligned.
Well, I'll tell you my goal for my clients and friends. Number one is to only do the work they love doing. Mm-hmm. Only work with people they love working with, make a significant contribution, and get paid for their risk and their experience. Mm-hmm. And then finally, to have plenty of time left over to work with their family and do the things that they're passionate about.
Yeah, that's a wonderful aspiration.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Kerry. This is Pilgrim on the 405, wishing everybody out there a prosperous day and help to make businesses in California thrive.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.